My guest, John McTernan, has found the most amazing statistics. Since 1991, how many times have you seen that when the United States goes against Israel, there have been what the world calls natural catastrophes?
Sid, at a minimum 50, but probably closer to 70.
Now, many people feel that when there are things like earthquakes and hurricanes and the stock market goes down, and that's the type of things we're talking about, many people think, John, that this is just the natural decay of planet Earth in every arena. How would you respond to that?
Well, Sid, there is truth to that,
sure,
about the natural decay, but it's the timing of it, Sid, and the magnitude of the hurricanes, for example, like Hurricane Andrew, Hurricane Katrina, and other hurricanes falling precisely on these events. Precisely, Sid.
Why is it, though? What I'm pondering and what I'd like John to explain is, why is it that there are these warning judgments from God within 24 hours of the event when the United States tries to divide up the land of Israel? Why is that, John?
Well, Sid, in the Bible, God has made promises from starting with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and their descendants, which would be the Jewish people today, about the land. And there are blessings and cursings, how people react to the Jewish people on the land. So part of the cursing is if you try and divide the land, which unfortunately the United States is really the leading nation in the world pressuring Israel to do this since 1991.
Give me some examples of what the United States did and what happened. Just a couple.
Well, Sid, we'll start at the very beginning at the Madrid peace process, which is really a code word for the dividing of Israel. That the date was October 30th, 1991. We'll say President Bush Sr., and not the current president, but President, his father, President Bush Sr. He initiated this after the Gulf War, thinking that he, with the power of the United States, you could have this comprehensive peace in the Middle East, and part of it would be dividing the land, including Jerusalem. And when the president was delivering this speech in Madrid, Spain, initiating the Madrid peace process, on that very day, Sid, in fact, I'll almost go as far as to say the hour, the perfect storm, and if you can think back to 1991,
There was a movie on it.
Movie, there was a best-selling book. The Perfect Storm was the most powerful storm ever recorded in history in the North Atlantic. It generated 30-foot waves that came against the president's home in Kennebunkport, Maine. He has a home on the coast.
It really caused destruction in his home?
Yeah, 30-foot waves. Eyewitnesses said that the waves just engulfed the home. They came over it. So as the president of the United States was in this process of touching the land of Israel, his own home was being devastated. So
give me another example.
Well, the next year, the Madrid peace process was transferred from Madrid, Spain to Washington, D.C. The very first day that they met was August 23rd, Sid, 1992, on American soil. Previously, they had been in Madrid.
Right.
And you could see the headlines in the newspapers. I have all the headlines, where Hurricane Andrew, at that time, it was the greatest natural disaster ever hit the United States. Since then, Hurricane Katrina has surpassed it. But Hurricane Andrew hit 4 hours before they met on American soil. So you'll see the newspapers with the headline, Hurricane Andrew and all the damage, and right there with it is the Madrid peace process. So you can't miss it, Sid.
Which is, the Madrid peace process is land for peace. But you mentioned Hurricane Katrina.
Yes.
Is there any correlation with that?
I'm going to stretch your mind a little bit to go back to Hurricane Katrina and the Jewish people being evacuated from Gaza.
The settlements.
It's called Gush Katif. And of course, Gaza is part of the covenant land. It's that land that was given to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and their descendants. In fact, Sid, the prophet Obadiah,
yes,
which your viewers may have a hard time finding because it's the smallest book in the Bible. When I preach on Obadiah, I give people extra time to find it. But right there in Obadiah, it talks about the day of the Lord, which of course is the second coming of the Lord Jesus.
Which we're obviously approaching.
Without a doubt. And it says specifically that the plain of the Philistines are going to belong to the Jewish people are going to be in control of the plain of the Philistines, which in modern terminology is Gaza. So the prophetic word says that this land is going to be inhabited, controlled by the Jewish people, yet through pressure of the United States with George Bush Jr. and with Condoleezza Rice, the Secretary of State, we've pressured the Jewish government, the Israeli government, to unilaterally abandon the land, and plus the president also promised American money to help with the resettlement of the Jewish people that are being taken off the land. So that was taking place exactly at the time that Hurricane Katrina hits the United States. So we're forcing Jewish people off the land in Israel, and Americans are being forced off the land in the United States.
Now listen, I would not call this a warning judgment. I would call this a judgment.
Yes, it. Yes. In my book, when I first started in the mid-1990s, I called it warning judgments or judgments unto repentance.
But we've passed that line.
Yes,
right,
we have,
now.
Sid.
This is what John has uncovered now. It's the best kept secret in American history. There is a key to American prosperity that is not mentioned in any of the history books. We'll reveal that, and you are going to be absolutely amazed when you hear the best kept secret. It won't be secret anymore. Be right back after this word.
We'll be right back to It's Supernatural. We now return to It's Supernatural.
Hello, Sid Roth here with John McTernan. What is the best, I mean the best kept secret in American history that is the key to our prosperity? John McTernan, what is it?
It's our blessing of the Jewish people, Sid, throughout the history of America.
You really see a tie. Let's go back to George Washington.
Well, Sid, from the very beginning, America is unique in world history. I almost have to touch upon world history and then bring in American history regarding the Jewish people. In Europe and in the Muslim countries, the Jews would be driven from one country to another. They'd be forced into ghettos. They'd be limited in what they could do. Their property would be stolen. And Sid, in the history of America, that's never occurred. Isn't that amazing, Sid? And going back even before we were a nation. But when...
It really is, does show the uniqueness of America.
Unique, Sid. And starting with I'll start with the American Revolution because of time constraints we have here. But the Jewish population during the American Revolution was approximately 3,000, maybe a little bit more. And the Jewish people, to a man, supported the American Revolution, all of them. And they gave everything they had, Sid. Most of them were merchants at that time, and they owned ships. They gave them all to the Continental Congress. Many of the ships that transported soldiers and goods were Jewish ships. They outfitted the Continental Army. Isn't that amazing?
I've read that there was one very wealthy Jewish man that without him, it's questionable whether there'd be any United States of America.
That's Chaim Solomon?
Yes.
And he was very instrumental, Sid, from 1781 to we were granted our independence in 1783. His credit kept America going. He was a Polish Jewish man that came over here. When you read about the history in the American Revolution, it brings tears to your eyes. He stayed behind the lines and he worked amongst the Prussian mercenaries to get them to join the American army because he was fluent in German. So he would work, isn't that amazing? He would work amongst the Germans to join the American army, and he was captured as a spy. He was let go the first time. He was captured the second time. He developed tuberculosis in prison. They were going to execute him. He was able to escape. He went to Philadelphia from New York. And because he knew seven languages, he knew international finance, and he was honest, he became an incredibly prosperous broker because a ship from France would come in, and he would be able to speak French and be able to negotiate the different currencies.
And single-handedly.
Single-handedly.
I mean, he financed the American Revolution, we could almost say. But I read things about George Washington that were amazing.
Yes, Sid. In my book, I document letters that George Washington wrote to the several Jewish congregations in the United States. And two of them in particular are astonishing. When he wrote to the Jewish people in Providence, Rhode Island, he said that he wanted America to be like the Messianic reign. And he didn't say that quite that way, I'm paraphrasing it, but he quoted Micah 4:4 in his letter to the Jewish people, saying that, you know, every man will sit under their fig tree and every man will sit under their vine. No
so
one will
he
offend.
Saw the connection between Jewish people and America and the Messianic kingdom.
That's right. He wanted to be America, to be such a blessing to the Jewish people that it would be like something like the Messianic reign. And then he said the same God that delivered the Jewish people from Egypt is the same God that created the United States of America. He made a direct link between the Jewish God and the God of America.
Let's fast forward. Abraham Lincoln, what was his view on the Jew?
Sid, it's amazing. There's so much, it's hard to, I'm going to have to clear it up here.
They'll get your book.
Most countries, Sid, initiate laws against the Jewish people where they can't go, they can't worship freely, for example, they can't travel, they can't own businesses. Probably one of the few times in history, America initiated a law for the Jewish people. A Jewish man went to President Lincoln and said, Mr. President, there are no Jews allowed in the, no Jewish chaplains allowed in the American military. And Abraham Lincoln realized that it was true, and he went to Congress and he petitioned Congress that they would specifically pass a law to allow Jewish chaplains in the Northern Army. Now, it's always the opposite in every other country, Sid, but in America, we made a law favoring the Jewish people. And then unfortunately, in the heat of battle, General Ulysses S. Grant made a major mistake. There were unscrupulous traders with merchants in the North that were trading with the South, and they were enabling the South to continue the war through this trading, and a few of them were Jewish. And General Grant initiated what's called in history is known as General Orders 11, literally deporting the Jewish people from Tennessee, Kentucky, Mississippi, in those areas that were under control of the Northern Army. A Jewish man went to a congressman and told him what had happened, who immediately went to the president and explained what General Grant was doing. Immediately, President Lincoln had General Grant rescind these orders and said, we are not going after a class of people. He would not allow the Jewish people to be stigmatized.
Now, why do you feel that we were blessed as a nation because we've been the only country that has offered such freedom to Jews?
Well, Sid, it's crystal clear, and this is the lens that I look at history through, that God said, I will bless them, speaking of Abraham and his descendants, I will bless them that bless you, and I will curse them that curse you. And I'm not saying America has been a perfect nation, and I'm not saying that the Jews didn't receive prejudice here, but they were accepted like everybody else. Like, my descendants are Irish, and, you know, coming, there's prejudice.
Listen, you have things in your book that are so phenomenal. Like, for instance, did you know there's a direct connection to 9/11 and going against Israel? We'll be right back after this word. Don't go away.
We'll be right back to It's Supernatural. We now return to It's Supernatural.
My guest, John McTernan, says that he sees a direct connection between 9/11 and the U.S. and the way the U.S. handles Israel. What is that?
Well, Sid, I just want to refresh your viewers' memory that we're talking about 50 or 60 or 70 same-day events, and, you know, things happening around the same day regarding the United States pressuring Israel. So 9/11 is not just what I'm saying is isolated.
In other words, within, say, 24 hours usually, or even the exact moment, when something bad happens to America since 1991, John has documented there is a direct correlation with our handling of Israel. So continue.
So just prior to 9/11, within a week prior to 9/11, and the information I'm relaying to you comes from information that the White House released and picked up by the national newspapers. The president had formulated his policy towards Israel was a two-state policy, and that on September 13th, Secretary of State at that time, Powell, was going to notify the Saudi Arabian ambassador that we were going to unilaterally recognize a Palestinian state, and that was going to be announced at the General Assembly of the United Nations on September 23rd, 2001. Hmm. So 9/11 occurred right at the very time we were going to unilaterally recognize a Palestinian state, and 9/11 put the brakes on it. And we then became at war with the same terrorist. I don't see much difference between the Palestinian terrorists and Osama bin Laden. I see them as the same bedfellows there. And we were at war now with the same enemies that Israel was at war. Literally, we were at war.
You know, in your book, I think it is absolutely amazing as you trace two countries that are similar, the United States of America and Russia, former Soviet Union, and how one country went against the Jew and what happened to them, and the other country blessed the Jew and what happened to them. Would you explain?
Sid, it's really quite an analogy where the Jews were being driven out of Russia simply because they were Jewish. The Russians were doing every conceivable thing to drive them out. The only country in the world, now we're talking starting in 1881, Sid, the only country in the world that would accept them was the United States. All of Europe closed the doors, wherever else closed the doors. The United States opened the doors wide, and however many Jews came out of Russia, we accepted, Sid. Eventually, it was somewhere between 2 or 3 million Jews fled Russia and came to the United States. But in my book, I document, starting in 1881, God began to raise us up as a world power. And you could see as the
Jews...
You could pinpoint it to the year, Sid, to the very year. Isn't that amazing? As we accepted the Jews into our country, God began to raise us up as a world power. And I show it almost year by year, this parallel.
Now, what happened to Russia when they did these things?
Sid, I want to speak briefly on what's called the May Laws
yes.
of 1883. And it was draconian laws that the Russian government, backed by the Russian Orthodox Church, applied on the Jewish people. For example, they were only allowed to live in a small section of Russia. If they were outside that, they lost their property, they lost their business, they lost their land at gunpoint, and they were driven into this section. They lived in small little enclaves. Their businesses would be stolen from them. Their kids couldn't go to school. They couldn't worship Judaism. They lived in like terror. And then the program started, which is organized assaults on the Jewish people. And I believe, Sid, that when you look at what the Russian people did to the Jewish people, that communism was nothing more than the May Laws of 1883 applied to all of Russia. Now, the Russian Orthodox Church couldn't worship. Like they were doing to the Jews, it hit the Russian Orthodox Church.
It's like the law of sowing and reaping.
Exactly.
As they were evil to the Jews, they reaped evil.
One generation later, it came on them. If you can think of Russia, Sid, and Stalin and Lenin, how they would uproot whole bunches of people and move them from send them to Siberia.
Yes.
That's exactly what they did to the Jewish people, Sid. Their land, you couldn't own land in Russia. Land was stolen from people. The Jewish people, their land was stolen from them. So I look at communism, one aspect of it is punishment. It's you bless the Jew, America was blessed. You cursed the Jew, the Russians got communism. And communism was nothing more than the May Laws of 1883 applied to the whole nation.
Mm. Well, here we are now, in the United States of America. As far as I'm concerned, one of the greatest countries the world has ever known. But John, you say in your book, we're at a crossroads. What do you mean?
Well, Sid, the American government, and specifically the presidency, and I'm not getting into Democrat or Republican because it was the same under the Democrats as it is under Republicans, we are interfering with God's prophetic plan, like we had mentioned before about Gaza. And God, in his mercy, is trying to bring this to our attention. He's trying to wake the church, Sid, because it's really on our shoulders here. That we need power from the church. We need intercession from the church. We need prayer from the church.
All right, what's going to happen if we continue fostering a two-state solution in the Middle East to the United States?
God will break our back, Sid. It'll either be, I don't know exactly how he's going to do it. There's several ways that are indicated by these warning judgments, but we will no longer be a world power. He will force us to stop interfering with Israel. And it's a matter of how severe the judgment will fall, Sid. But there is no doubt that our back will be broken here where we cannot longer
One
interfere.
Minute, look in the camera, talk to President Bush. What would you say to him?
Say, President Bush, please stop interfering with the affairs of Israel. Bless Israel. Stand with Israel to support Israel if it's attacked by Ahmadinejad, for example, of Iran, but no longer interfere with the integrity of the nation of Israel.
Do you believe that there is teeth behind that threat of Iran?
There is no doubt about it, Sid. Absolutely no doubt about it. They will attack when they have the capability of doing it, no doubt.
So what would you advise President Bush to do right now in reference to Iran?
Well, he's already told Iran that if they attack Israel, that we will defend Israel. The president has said that March of this year, which is a tremendous thing to say. No other nation in the world would dare say that. That's the dichotomy in the United States.
Listen, here's what I believe. I believe we're buying time. And I want as much time as possible here in the United States. I want this to be the land of the brave and the land of the free. I want it to be a place for Jewish people to be free. I'm Jewish. I also happen to be a Russian Jew, so I'm very grateful to the United States of America. But I say this to you, that one day, according to the Bible, every Jew will end up in Israel. But the problem is, the safest place in the world is not the United States for a Jew. The safest place in the world is not Israel for a Jew. There's only one safe place for a Jew, and that is intimacy with God. There is only one way to have intimacy with God. There is only one God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. There is only one Messiah, not a Messiah for the Jews and a Messiah for the Gentiles. There is only one covenant. Jewish people already have the correct covenant. It's called the New Covenant. It's found in Jeremiah 31, verse 31. Gentiles are grafted in to the new Jewish covenant found in Jeremiah chapter 31:31. When someone tells God they're sorry for their sins, that's called repentance, and asks God to forgive them in the name of the Jewish Messiah, Jesus, Yeshua, and believes that he separated their sins from them and took them on himself, and boldly proclaims, Yeshua is my Messiah and Lord, then you are under the new covenant. You have intimacy with God, and there could not be a safer place than in the arms of Yeshua.